This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
In honor of our 31st year producing on-air travel broadcasts, come along and join us as we travel back in time to the fall of 2016, where we met with David and Quinn Rathkamp, who are saving the world one beer at a time.
Roll out the barrel, we'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel.
Quinn and David Rathkamp made a dramatic transition in their lives. They both gave up successful medical practices to save the world one beer at a time. David realized his true passion in life was crafting fine Belgian-style beers, and both Quinn and David also shared a passionate quest to help the less fortunate in life, close to home and around the world. So they started the Save the World Brewing Company in Marble Falls, Texas, and their business became the first 100% philanthropic production brewery in America, with all net profits earmarked for worthy causes such as Habitat for Humanity and Meals on Wheels. I met up with Quinn and David at Canyon of the Eagles Resort in Burnett County in the heart of the Texas Hill Country. Come along and join us. We're here with Dave and Quinn, who own Save the World Brewing Company. This is literally a definition of the word unique in the world of beers. Tell us, what sets you apart?
Well, I guess number one, we are America's first 100% philanthropic production brewery.
And our motto is making great beers for great causes, and that's what we've been trying to do from day number one.
So save the world one beer at a time, in other words.
Yep.
That's exactly it.
I love it. So why? You both were practicing physicians, and you decided to make a major shift in your life. And there's obviously some great rewards in what you're doing beyond just crafting great beer.
It's all about pursuing your passion. You know, my personal passion was making beer. Quinn's passion was to give to charities. And we thought we would meld these two passions together and make great beer for great causes.
Yep, so that's why our business model is to donate 100% of our net profits to charities.
Back in time, you're both in medicine, practicing MDs, and something's not fulfilled in your life. Sure. Tell us about that epiphanous moment that spurred you both to make a major change.
We would, every year or so, we'd go on these medical mission trips, and we'd go to these third world countries and see these devastating diseases and these people that really needed true medical needs. And then I would personally come back and I would see my patients and I would treat these first world conditions, and it just didn't feel fulfilling. I didn't see like I was making a difference, and I always thought, if I don't show up tomorrow, it's not going to make a difference. Somebody else is going to come in here and they're going to be just fine. And about that same time, our men's group at church was meeting together, and we were talking about passion and pursuing your passion and that you're made for a reason, that you're not just here by accident. And we started going around the room, and everybody was like talking about what their passion was. Some guy was like, oh, I love singing, I love singing, I love. And another guy was like, I like just making things. And it came to me and was like, I like making beer. And everybody kind of turned to me, and the leader was like, oh, God can use that. So I came back and I talked to Quinn, who's very understanding, and I was like, you know, my passion is actually making beer. And her passion has always been, she always thought, you know, if she could do anything, it would be to work at a non-for-profit, just give everything away. And I thought, oh, this would be great. We can merge it together. I'll make beer. You give all our profits away. And so that's how it came about.
Did you guys save enough while you were in your doctor profession that you're okay? You're okay that you can afford to do that?
We're not destitute. That is true. Thankfully.
We rely on the generosity of others.
Indeed, indeed. No, we're very thankful. We've really been blessed.
Yeah.
So we have saved, and we've got very generous and supportive family. And so we're in a good position to where we're able to pursue this dream and passion of having a charitable brewery, and yet at the same time still be able to live.
And for Dave to manifest his passion.
That's exactly it.
It's very nice because we own it ourselves. We're not investor-owned, and we bought and paid for everything ourselves. So we have no debt. We have no investors, so we don't have to answer to anybody. So all our profits can go to it instead of going back to pay for people invested into our company.
You know what I will say? I loved practicing medicine. I had a wonderful practice. I had great patients I had relationships with and my office mates. But I will tell you, it's incredible to be in a profession where you intentionally give all of your proceeds away to charity. It's very liberating, actually.
Let's talk a little bit about the recipients and who receives and how that targeting process takes place.
Our regular charities that we donate to are Food for the Hungry, which is an international charity, Meals on Wheels, which we donate both to the national Meals on Wheels as well as local chapters, and then also Habitat for Humanity. We chose those charities because they're ones that we have had a lot of volunteering experience with, so we know them well, or we've donated just extensively to them in the past, and we know that they give a huge percentage of their funds to the actual charity versus administrative or otherwise. Right. We will also choose rotating charities like food banks or disaster reliefs when things arise.
We try and focus on charities that supply basic human needs, food, clothing, shelter, those sort of things, as opposed to, you know, I mean, there's great charities out there, but we really want to make sure we focus on charities that really do the most good.
The delivering of good.
Exactly.
Well, and also to those who can't really help themselves, mm-hmm. too.
Is there a vision in your mix of going on a mission that's in conjunction with your new world?
That would be great. I mean, it would be great if we could just kind of get our brewery going and everything, and then we could just kind of venture out and go to our places that really, you know, we're supporting and helping and go from there.
Your label on your beers, mm-hmm. what does the label say? Does anybody know that it's a greater good beer?
Right. Well, our name is Save the World Brewing, so that would cause most people to question what they mean by that.
But it could just be a phrase.
Right? Well, in the back, it says a philanthropic brewery, so hopefully people think that we are generous in giving. But our motto is also saving the world one beer at a time.
Oh, I thought I made that up.
No, I thought that was really impressive.
Oh, thanks. Yes. But it does amaze me how many people come out to our brewery and don't know that we're a philanthropic brewery. They just know, oh, I love your beer. And so it's really great to be able to share the whole story and what we're about and, you know, and go on deeper levels with it. Just that it's not just great beer. It's also that we're doing it for great causes.
You know, and I think that's really cool and live.
In today's world, it's about making choices. And you can choose intentionally to make the right choice. There are so many great breweries out there, great beers, but if you know that you can have a great beer that then gives back, all the better.
I would agree with that.
Let's dovetail back for a moment in a more selfish world. Dave's personal passion in the crafting of beer.
Yes, let's talk more about me. But, I mean, it is, you know, Sam Koch, he's the owner of Sam Adams. It was like, you know, Jim, that's right, exactly. Once you do something you're loving, you know, you never stop working. So, and that's what we're kind of doing. I mean, it is work, it's hard work and everything, and it's long hours. I mean, I thought I worked hard as a physician, but these long hours are definitely longer than ever worked before, but we love it. You know, you go home and you sleep well and you wake up and you're happy, and so it's great.
Better than being a winemaker too, because you don't have to wait 4 years to see if you muck something up or not.
Yeah, it's a lot quicker as far as that's concerned.
Right.
Yeah, though some of our beers do take quite a long time, and we have some that take 6 to 8 months, mm-hmm. and then you figure out if it was a success. We have another one that's brewing right now that's not going to be ready for 3 years.
It's three years of aging.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, but if you never start making it, you'll never have it done. So we're in it for the long haul.
And let's talk for a moment about the bottle aging beers.
Yes.
How common is that in the world of beers?
It's fairly common, especially in the European Belgian beers in particular, and especially the higher end beers that are made in the United States. Just because it's more elegant, it improves shelf life, and it gives a better flavor to beer.
Yeah, I didn't really consider this concept until we actually went to Belgium. Mm. And I went up to a bar and I ordered a beer. I said, oh, could I have a, you know, Chimay, Grand Reserve? And they're like, oh, sure, what year would you like? And I never thought of beer like that. And it was just amazing that they would store these different years that you could actually try. So,
and for the listener, tell us what you're talking about specifically and what that process is and what makes it distinctive.
Oh, for as far as bottle conditioning is concerned? Yes, so before we add our beer into the bottle, we'll add some fresh yeast and a little extra sugar. And inside the bottle, it'll naturally produce the carbonation, which has some advantages. One is oxygen is the enemy of beer. Anytime you've been to a kegger party where they're pumping in air all day long, that beer tastes terrible at the end of the day. But since we have these living organisms inside our beer, yeast, they'll scavenge that oxygen, so our beer will stay fresher for a longer period of time. And the other thing it produces these little tiny bubbles. It's the same method that champagne is made.
It's a champenois, the exactly. Riddling. Yeah.
So same way. So when you taste it, it has a silkier mouthfeel. It doesn't have a biting harshness to it, which is great.
Okay, question for you. In the champenois champagne method, méthode champenois, you can tell by holding up the glass, and you see the bubbles coursing up in a straight line, not in a random 7-Up way. Does that hold true with your beer?
It can, especially some of the finer glasses, just like champagne glasses, will have a little notch or an etch in the bottom of it, so it'll actually cascade through that in there where it creates the nucleation point. So yes, our bottles will also do that.
That's really cool. Yeah. So that's the acid test.
Yes.
It is. A lot of it has to do with the glass. Yeah. That is true.
Well, you know what? We could go on and on. Before we go, though, is there anything that I missed or that you would like to share or that we didn't talk about?
I would encourage people to just follow their passion and their dreams. I mean, we're very blessed to have been given this opportunity, and we're very thankful for it.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
For further information.
So I'm Dave Rathkamp at SaveTheWorldBrewing.com, and this is
Quinn Rathkamp at the same website, SaveTheWorldBrewing.com.
Love it. Thanks again, you guys. What a great day in Texas.
Yes, indeed.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, Log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.